Let's get ready to rumble.
Yes, we're back. It is episode 83 of the Hibs Ramble. I'm your host this evening, Liam, and I'm joined by Ryan. How are we, mate?
I'm all good, mate. I'm all good. It's good to be back. Missed the last two, so good to be involved again.
Top man. And I've also got Sean with me this evening. Sean, how on earth are you?
Yes, I am fantastic, mate.
Yeah, well, I mean, after that result on Sunday, are you really? Oh, good.
I've moved past that already.
I'm glad. Obviously, this episode is going to be a lot of chatting about that Rangers game at the weekend. But before we dive into all that, we've just got a couple of bits to talk about. So the ticket drive that the podcasts are championing at the moment has raised over £400 for tickets for those less fortunate at the moment. We've had a pair of Kenai Omegua's boots that we were able to football card off. And Murray Johnson has actually dropped off to me this afternoon one of his shirts, one of his signed shirts, which is really cool. I think that's last season's, Sean, correct me if I'm wrong. And a pair of his gloves as well that are also signed. So we will be doing a football card for them in due course. But just to everyone who's donated, a massive, massive thank you. None of it is going unrecognised. We're really, really grateful for the donations, and it'll be going to a brilliant, brilliant cause. Another brilliant cause that we want to chat about is the sponsored cycle that David Gray and some fans will be doing from Hampden to Easter Road in May to raise money for autism. And the last thing that I want to talk about before we jump into the game is Hibs have actually released a statement yesterday, I think it was yesterday, that the allocation for away supporters, apart from Hearts, is going to be slashed. And that's something that we're definitely going to talk about as we move through the gears this episode. But so we'll jump straight into it. Ryan, of course, see when the lineup comes out on Sunday and you see Triantis in, and you see no Venti, no Levitt in the squad, what are you thinking?
Well, it was a bit of a strange one. I was trying to kind of piece it together based off the personnel, try to figure out maybe what shape we went for. I thought maybe for a minute we changed it, obviously, with three centre-halves being in there and not having a recognised third central midfielder. I was happy that Cadden was in from the start, though. I think Kim getting the 90 minutes under his belt was really beneficial to us in the start, this last kind of five games into the split. But yeah, I was trying to kind of piece it together, and then obviously as the game kicked off, I realised that Fantas was playing in kind of holding midfield, which, to be fair, I was sceptical of, I'll be honest with you, but I actually think he had quite a good game, which is one of the positives to take from that.
Yeah. Sean, I've been reading that it's a way that Monty liked to deploy Triantis at his time at Central Coast. I think that when Nectar's played in that position, he's played a lot better. I feel like he can kind of play without the sort of worry of actually having to defend, which sounds mental because he's a centre-half. But I think it gives him that freedom to play a little bit with the safety of knowing that he's got Rocky and Fish behind him.
Yeah, I think it just gives him, like you said, that little bit of extra security, I think. And I think it also just gives him a little bit more belief that he can maybe feel a little bit more relaxed in what Monty is asking him to do, and feeling a little bit less pressured. Listen, I know loads of people thought he played really, really well against Rangers. I didn't think he was actually overly great, which might be controversial or going against the grain there, but it was certainly a better performance than when he's played at centre-half, that's for sure. And he has obviously played in that position the last couple of times when he's came on as well. So I mentioned it already on a couple of episodes before, like Monty knows what he's going to get out of him and knows what he's good at and what he's not good at. So maybe moving him into that midfield role allows us to get a little bit of a better lively performance.
Yeah, I think it can also change, you know, from game to game. I don't think we'll need a Triantis sitting midfielder, Ryan, against Ross County tomorrow night. But, you know, it's one that we can deploy when we're in these games where we know we're going to be a wee bit more under the cosh.
Yeah, I mean, I can see absolutely the reasoning for playing him there. Kind of more naturally defensive-minded player, somebody that would be more fixed and rigid in that shape as opposed to when you're playing Ross County. If you play Dylan Levitt, he's obviously got the kind of natural ability to express himself and go forward a lot more than what Triantis would have. I think he did provide us a lot of security off the ball, and he was quite good in the transitional phases against Rangers. We didn't really get caught out with many counter-attacks. He kind of was the anchor in there, and he never really moved, which I thought benefited us on the night. So going forward, it's something that we could use if we get in the top six, maybe away to Parkhead or Tynecastle, wherever it may be. I think in those kind of games, we're going to have less of the ball. It's absolutely a tool that we can deploy.
It's positive anyway, because, you know, after these first few games, you thought this geezer's never going to play for Hibs again. But I think there's been a little bit of a turnaround in his form because of the new way that he's been deployed. So that's certainly a positive. Just on the start, before obviously we give away the penalty, I thought we started, Sean, really, really well. The tempo was high. It looked like we were playing a similar sort of way that we were at Tynecastle, you know, kind of trying to get in their faces, playing the front foot, make it difficult for Rangers. And, you know, you probably could have seen us scoring before they got their penalty.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we needed to start like that to try and have any lively positive impact on the whole match. Lastly, touching on Triantis, obviously he got booked very, very early on. So I know I maybe expected a better lively performance from him.
I feel like he's booking with an absolute nothing booking as well.
Game maturity and some of the stuff. Aye, but he's still on that booking, so he needs to be a little bit game smarter throughout the match, which he was, which was great. And I think that's a real positive for a player that is traditionally played at centre half, but maybe moved a little bit further forward. So, but yeah, touching on how we started, I think we did start well. Obviously, what then happened with the penalty and things like that. Is very, very frustrating, and I know we'll come on to that, but in these types of games, especially at home, we do need to kind of start, you know, like a house on fire, so to speak, and try and make a mark early doors, because the longer the game goes on, the more likely we're just going to be under the cosh and soak up more and more pressure and fall further and further back.
I completely agree, and I feel like we did it up until a point. Obviously, we give away the penalty fairly early on. Here's going to be the start of a big, long discussion. Listen, I'm just going to go through it chronologically, and then I'm going to come to you as just for your opinion on certain parts of the happenings of, and the leading up to the penalty and stuff. So I feel like there was a foul on Martin Boyle in the middle of the park on the lead up. Obviously, then the ball gets switched. It's sent through to Dujon Sterling. I looked at it back today. It looks to me as if there's minimal contact, if any, between Obita and Sterling. Sterling goes down. I mean, it's one of them where you're absolutely screaming for it if it's your team. Listen, I think it's one of these that can go either way. It never goes our way. Then, of course, Stephen McLean points before he's even hit the turf, penalty to Rangers. Tavernier steps up to take it. Marshall saves and Lundstrom puts the ball in the back of the net. But Ryan, for you, is it a penalty?
No, I was kind of thinking about this earlier. It's not too dissimilar to Martin Boyle against Celtic, if you remember. Maybe a different intensity to the run, or Boyle was maybe going a bit quicker. But there's minimal contact. There's maybe a slight arm on the shoulder. But I've said this the last couple of times I've been on. We're in real danger of sanitising the game of football, a non-contact sport. by the rules of the law, he's applied it properly. In that sense, it's a penalty. But everything in that sense needs a reform, because you can't be given penalties for soft fouls unless you're going to be consistent with
it. Yeah, I mean, even looking in the second half, there was one on Marcondes.
I suppose the only difference was that Marcondes didn't run across his path, whereas Sterling kind of ran across or beat his path. But I also think that Sterling kind of slowed down and made his strides a bit bigger in order to initiate that contact. Yeah. So he was definitely paying for it. Some pundits would say it was clever, and I suppose it was. He won his team a penalty, but if everybody was to go into the box kind of kicking their legs out, they're going to initiate contact. So
yeah,
that's where it needs to be. The rules of the game need to be reformed in that sense.
It looked to me as if, you know, when he was running next to Obita, and they were coming together a wee bit, that he was kind of flicking his heels up to try and catch Obita and then go down himself.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly how it looked to me as well. Like, he was the one that was kicking out in order to get the contact to go down. So if I look at that and still think it's a penalty, it's worrying.
It is worrying, Sean. And I think it's a very similar foul, non-foul, on Martin Boyle in the middle of the park on the lead-up. I just think if that's not given and the penalty's given, why? Really?
I think the two are completely different, if I'm honest. I think there's next to zero contact on Martin Boyle. Martin Boyle's anticipating contact, and there's a camera angle that is to the left. Is it to the left of the dugouts, which is like towards where you normally sit? When you see it from that angle, you can see that there is next to no contact to Martin Boyle, or in my understanding of watching it back, is there's next to no contact at all in that one. Whereas what Ryan has said about him maybe being a little bit smarter, Rangers player being a little bit smarter and kicking his heels up and maybe taking the extra lunges or whatever, yes, he's maybe anticipated the contact, but it's also very, very stupid for Obita to kind of go across, because it happens like 5 or 10 minutes later and he doesn't do it then because he's learned from his mistake. You shouldn't be going across a boy in the middle of the box where you could potentially trip them up on their heels or entice any contact. So for me, their penalty is a penalty. It's easily preventable because all Obita needs to do is pick either side of him and run by him and try and maybe put a little bit of contact on him, but not enough for him to actually go down. So just try and put him off, which you see quite a lot nowadays. The Marcondes one is absolutely never a penalty. Marcondes looks for it and he dives. You can literally see him like as if he's diving into a pool. When he knows that ball is too far gone, he then just chucks himself to the ground and tries to buy himself one. So, their penalty for me is a penalty. Martin Boyle's is pretty much non-contact, so isn't even a foul. And Marcondes is
well, I think that,
never a penalty
that
either.
Seals it, Sean. We will be selling you to the Rangers Ramble in the summer.
Can I just ask a question, Sean? How dissimilar do you think it was to the one that Martin Boyle claimed against Celtic? Do you think that was also a penalty there? Against
Martin
Celtic?
Boyle's one.
At home?
I think I said at the time I thought it was a penalty. I think there is an angle where Martin Boyle's anticipating contact and maybe goes down a little bit theatrical, but
so
there is
Sterling,
contact.
Though.
So therefore, I think but I'm saying that is a penalty. I'm not saying Martin Boyle's isn't. I'm just saying sometimes you can make something look more theatrical than
I also
than
think
it,
it's
than
a reputation kind of procedure in that sense. Referees have already disappeared.
Yeah. And I do think Martin's against Celtic was a penalty, because when you're running at that speed, any level of intensity or any level of push or shove, I can't remember the exact incident, but there was an incident years ago to do with Steven Gerrard where he feels like the slightest nudge and he goes down in the box and he just kind of like slides and falls forward. And there was a lot of debate years and years and years ago about then. And when you're running at speed and you're trying to dodge players and stuff like that, especially if a player's cutting across you at the back, in this instance at the weekend, or Martin Boyle's one, I feel like if there is any level of contact like that, where you're either, whether it's a collision of knees or ankles or foot to ankle, when you're running at speed, it does take you down, and then therefore it should be a penalty.
I suppose the reason I was asking is that's the lack of consistency we're seeing. Albeit different referees and what have you, but if they're all kind of viewing the game in the same way, it would be...
Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like I say that three out of four episodes a month. Do you know what I mean? We talk about consistency.
That's my major gripe with the way that the game's officiated at the minute, is the level of inconsistency.
I think...
Yes.
It's being consistent, of course. I mean... From the disappointment in the officiating, because at the time I didn't think it was a penalty. I look back on it now, and Sean, I still don't think it's a penalty. That's just the way that I'm viewing the rules of the game, and it's exactly the way that referees referee the game. It's completely subjective, isn't it? So it's not there's not a black or white. Some referees would give it, some referees wouldn't. I wouldn't if it was me. But what's more disappointing for me is the penalty save and then the really, really poor defensive follow-up. And I watched it back again this afternoon. John Lundstrom is one of the furthest players back when the penalty's taken. I think he's on the edge of the D or the kind of there or thereabouts on the right-hand side of our box facing the goal. And Marshall makes a save. It's a poor penalty by James Tavernier's standards, but you know, Marsh has got to save it, and he does. And you know, I don't think there's going to be a more frustrated guy in the stadium, Sean, than him when Lundstrom fights through the bodies and manages to bundle it in somehow.
Yeah, I picked up on the exact same point at the time, because Marshall goes to the ref to ask if there was an encroachment. I don't know the rules when it comes to the penalties with the whole like coming off your line. I don't know if because he saved it, although Rangers scored the follow-up, could they have maybe pulled it back for a retake if potentially Marshall was off his line as well? I don't know. And that's why I initially thought Marshall was asking if he had maybe came off his line before it was kicked. Hopefully someone can clarify the
rules Rangers,
on
I don't
that
think
aspect of it. But
if Rangers score a goal, then it's never going to get retaken.
But maybe if it's any other team, you never know. And then I worked out that he was obviously asking about the encroachment, because upon the replay, you can see John Lundstrom, like you said, is he's a couple steps back from the curve of the D with the anticipation that it is going to get saved. And I don't know who's around that side, so I don't know who is following up.
There was massive bodies.
But yeah, we need to... There was about four or five. So we need to have a... You want to defend a penalty the same way as if you are attacking a penalty. You always see it when penalties are taken. It's always the attacking team that are in the box first and that are always further in the box. And it's like the defensive team, the one that are defending the penalty, are just kind of accepting the fact that it's going to be a penalty and not anticipating a save.
Yeah, I mean,
and I think that's
Craig
part of the
pointed
problem.
That out in the group chat, didn't he, that... He thought that the Hibs players were just expecting Tavernier to score it, and you know, 99.99 times out of 100, he probably does. You know, but Ryan, that's the one time where he kind of shanks it a wee bit and makes it a little bit easier for Marshall. I mean, I thought, oh, for fuck's sake, here we go again, and he's going to stick it in the top bin. But it's just frustrating. It really is frustrating. And the way that the ball trundles and trickles and takes about half an hour to get into the back of the net. I don't even think it gets into the back of the net. I think it just goes over the line and it's Marshall that ends up in the back of the net. But you're thinking, good work, and then undone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course it's frustrating. The goalkeeper's done all he can do in saving it, and that's where he needs his teammates to kind of dig him out now and do their part. You're talking a 6-8 yard sprint back towards your own goal, and you throw your body on the line. Lundstrom's obviously been quite clever. Again, we've been outsmarted, and he's built up momentum in a run that's going to be hard to track from a standing position. The majority of players will just stand on the edge of the box. And I suppose the danger is the encroachment from defensive or attacking sides into that box, as well as the goalkeeper coming off his line. So the odds are kind of stacked against the defensive team in that way. However, you just need to mark your man and have a bit more desire and personal pride to get there before he does. Even if it goes into the back of your own net, at least you've got there before the attacker. Yeah. You've tried everything that you can to get the ball out of harm's way. So it is really disappointing. The goalkeeper, I suppose we're kind of lucky that Marshall's quite a decent penalty stopper. So we should also have been anticipating that would happen.
Yeah, he was. I mean, if it was me, if I was David Marshall, then I would be kicking off. You know, the more you watch it back, the worse it gets, really, when you see how. I mean, John Lundstrom is not a player who is blessed with pace. So, I mean, the fact that he's beating anyone over 6, 7, 8 yards is fairly embarrassing. I don't think he would beat me over 6, 7, 8 yards. Never mind a professional footballer.
There's four Hibs players.
It's not good enough. But
Mizian makes no attempt to go in the box. Obita makes no attempt to go into the box. Triantis makes half attempt, and Rocky's the only one that's actually attempting. And ends up in the goal with Lundstrom.
Yeah. You should ban Mark at a penalty like you do a corner. You follow him everywhere. It's really as simple as that.
It's a mindset thing, isn't it? Though when you look at Tavernier standing over a penalty, even Tavernier standing over a free kick for 20-25 yards, you're thinking, "Oh, this is going in the back of the net." So yeah, it's disappointing. But listen, I think it's a lesson that's going to be learned from our side. You know, chances are that even if we'd have kept that one out and Lundstrom hadn't scored the follow-up, then they would have got another penalty further on in the game anyway. So that's as much as nailed on. But I felt like the referee made a nod for his own back. And the next incident that I want to talk about is the injury to Martin Boyle, which looked horrific at the time. Looking back on it, Sean, it looked bad at the time, but it was one of them where it looked like a 50-50 in the air, and then he stays down and he doesn't move, and then the Rangers medical staff are looking at him and you're thinking, oh my god, what's happened here? But the thing that the kicker for me, and a lot of people have pointed it out on social media today, is that it took Stephen McLean at least 15 seconds from the point of the incident to go over and check on the welfare of a player who's lying unconscious in the middle of the park. That is, for me, unacceptable.
Yeah, any longer and it could have, depending on player awareness and smartness, mm-hmm. could have been fatal. I know we sit and joke on this podcast and we insert memes about stuff that goes on and like the Sir Alex Ferguson one and stuff like that, but first things first, like before I speak on the matter, the most important thing is that Martin is all good and that he's well and mm-hmm. he's in a stable condition and he's back home with his family, and that's obviously the most important thing. The longer the incident went on, the more concerned that I was at the time. You know, seeing it in real time, it does just look like one of those where two players have landed awkwardly, one's landed awkwardly on top of another, and then that's kind of what's caused it. But then Marcondes goes straight in there, puts him in the recovery position. Does he try and see if he swallowed mm-hmm. his tongue? I don't know. It kind of looked like that from where I was looking. So again, that touches on the whole player awareness and player smartness, which is good. You know, it's worrying when the opposition players are, you know, ushering the medical staff on and ignoring the referees.
I think we need to say a big fair play to Jack Butland on that as well, because he was more or less straight over with Marcondes, and he was the one who initiated the call to the sidelines for the physio to come on.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it's great that, that's probably in a weird way, I can say it when you see instances like this happen at football, that's probably the best place you want something like that to happen, because you're surrounded by medical experts and you've got medical experts on hand right away. You wouldn't want something like you see stuff happen in the stands and you see stuff happen like on the pitch. You wouldn't want something like that to happen when you're in the house and there's an ambulance that's going to take God knows how long. So the response to the medical staff and the response to some of the players is ultimately what's been key here. But yeah, absolutely no surprise that it took the referee as long as he did. Listen, if it was a Rangers player, would they have maybe called it a little bit earlier? I don't know. I'm sure people can jump to that conclusion if they want to. Again, just lastly on that, for me, when I saw it in real time, I kind of understood why there wasn't a foul given, because like you said, it looked like just a coming together, more of a 50-50. What then needs to take place is, you know, player welfare, like you said, and the referee needs to understand that these two players are both going absolutely at it as best as they can and as fast as they can. There's been a coming together. He needs to check on that incident before he then turns his head away and looks at where the ball's going. You've got the linesman, you've got the fourth official, you've got VAR. They can keep track of the ball and where the ball goes. And if there's an incident that he misses it, you know, that's the whole reason in having the assistant and the linesman. So when there's a coming down of players like that and they're landing on each other, he should be checking that first.
Yeah, there was actually a moment in the first half as well before that happened that I'm not too sure what Rangers player it was. It was down, but they were down for, you know, a fair while, and he just kept going and kept going and kept going. And aye, Hibs were on the attack, and it would have been great if we'd scored. And, you know, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about it if we had scored, then we'd went 1-0 up or we'd equalised at 1-1.
But with that one, I know the one you're talking about, the ref constantly turns his head and checks and checks and checks. And then once he realises it's not a head injury or a head incident, he then obviously just continues with play. Whereas this one, he doesn't turn round at all initially within that time. And then obviously that's kind of where the players come in.
Ryan, I think the whether it was a foul or not is a by the by at this point in time. You know, the main thing is that Martin's all right. You know, it looked like a proper sore one for both players, and clearly Martin came out on the worst end. But you know, the worst bit about it was and listen, we're not angels, we're not, but the reaction from the Rangers fans, and often you say it's a minority of the support, but that was a lot of that stand that were booing Boyle as he was walking off, that were singing "Die Fenian Bastard." What can you say about it?
Firstly, I want to just touch on the reaction time of the referee and what have you. We need to sort something out long term in the game of football when it comes to serious head injuries or other injuries to do that are probably not in a sporting manner. Do you know, like what happened to Fabrice Muamba, but it was somebody from the crowd that came in and helped him. I think we need an independent body that is not biased to either club, that sits in every game, and as soon as they enter the field of play, the game stops. It can overrule the referee. If they identify an injury from the side or wherever they sit to be really, really bad and the game needs to be stopped immediately, then they have the power to do that. Because we have seen some real serious injuries being overlooked by referees for, it's going to be too long one day. Like Sean says, it's a nail on the head. You've got to take player welfare into consideration there. It's a guy with a family. You know, that's when the sport pales into insignificance. So I suppose that kind of ties in with the sectarian, bigoted singing that goes along with that. I think Hibs have done the right thing. In the aftermath of that, I think it's a stand that we probably had to take before now, and it was probably just the final nail in the coffin in terms of how far that club have really taken it. It's never the minority, and it never will be, but they will never own up or front up to the things they do or say. I know you've said we're no angels, and I'm sure we'd be the first to hold our hands up if we were in the wrong, whereas you'll never ever get that from a fan base like Rangers or even Celtic, because let's not just make this about one side. You know, there is a lot of sectarianism, a lot of bigotry involved in the game of football. There's a lot of politics involved when it comes to Israel-Palestine. It doesn't need to be here. The majority of fans do not want that in their fan culture. And I speak for all four of us here and say that that's not what we go to the football for. Or three of us.
Yeah,
sorry.
I was going to say, obviously,
I counted the screens and counted myself. But there's no place in the game for it. And I think the Hibs taking a stand now, Hearts, Aberdeen, slowly, we need to try and root this out of the game, because it's totally unnecessary. It's not needed. It could be another reason that nobody wants to buy into this product and give us TV rights and show it, because of the bile that's screamed out the television screen when you watch it.
Yeah, I mean, Sean, it's just something that you come to expect when Rangers come to town. They're shouting about Bobby Sands and being up to their knees and what have you. And it's it really is grating. It's got to the point where it's just becoming boring as well. Like, you're like, why are you singing about the king? The king has no influence in Scottish football. Why are you singing, oh, fuck the Pope? This, that. It's, to me, it's ancient. It's ancient stuff. And it should be nowhere near football, exactly like Ryan says. Is cutting the allocation the right thing to do?
Yeah, it's long overdue. Weirdly, we spoke about it in the last episode, and I'm sure I said, like, it's just never going to happen for, and I think I listed three or four reasons.
You must have listened.
So it's great that...
I know
Ben Kendall's a big rambler anyway, so he's obviously, you know, finally listening to some of the stuff that I've had to tell him. Yeah, it's long overdue. It won't stop. It doesn't matter whether it's 200, 400 or 4,000 that are in that away stand. Those songs will still be sung. It is more prominent when Celtic and Rangers are in town that it isn't a minority, whereas with Hearts, for example, when they use some of the songs that they sing, you can hear some sections of their support get very upset and annoyed and boo and stuff like that. Same with like Dundee United, some with Kilmarnock and stuff like that with some of the songs that they sing as well. They obviously just twist and change some of the words in comparison to the Celtic and Rangers songs. So, yeah, regardless of how many are there for the Old Firm, it will still be sung. Long overdue for sure. And I'm glad to see it. What we now need to do as a club is buy into what our club are trying to do, back the club, back the board, back the players, and do similar to what Hearts have done this season. Hearts have like a 7,000 season ticket waiting list, and I don't care, like, Hibs and Hearts go on about attendance, FC and stuff like that. Like, if we're cutting the allocation, this is a fantastic opportunity for us to maximise the amount of Hibs fans that we can get in there. We'd obviously, with other podcasts, doing a ticket drive to get, you know, other people there that are more or less fortunate that can go to the football. And I know the football is very, very expensive. So if there's any way in which we can get more Hibs fans into there, we should be looking to do that. And we can do that by cutting their allocation, which hopefully Hibs fans will now buy into and be more inclined to go to these games and take up the opportunity to maybe get
completely
a season
agree.
Ticket or just
and
ticket in general.
What we were talking about...
Sean's bang on. What was the other thing I was going to say there? It also feels like the first time in a wee while that the board have kind of listened to the majority of the fan base. I think there was a lot of fans took to Twitter after the game and said they wouldn't be back or they'd left early due to the sectarianism. So it felt as though the club had kind of listened to the majority this time and just went with it.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. And just what we were saying off air, Ryan, before we started recording, it maybe was a case of we needed the money, so we couldn't cut the allocation before. But now that's not a, well, I don't think it probably will have been a requirement for us for many years now. But I don't think we've ever needed a full stand two or three times a season from Rangers and Celtic. To keep the club afloat. Some smaller teams, yes, maybe the teams that don't get as well attended games as us. But I think that, like you said, Sean, it should have been done a long, long time ago and long overdue. And I'm glad that it's happened. And I don't think we should ever give them the full stand back, them or Celtic. But I would like to say that I hope we continue to give Hearts a full stand because I want the full stand at Tynecastle.
Completely agree.
But and the thing is,
yeah, completely agree.
See if Hearts were to turn around tomorrow and say we are cutting Hibs allocation to half, then we could have no gripes after the way that some of the fans behaved at Tynecastle the other week. But they're not going to do that because they know that that's the minority. You know what I mean? Like
also, if we take a wider look at Derby's, even if Hearts are allocation, a part of me wouldn't want us to cut the allocation coming to Easter Road because it takes away from the experience, the Derby, the furore around it, the attraction from out with the fan base. You know, I said to you off air about Rangers Celtic, it's taken away from what it was. It's no longer the biggest derby in the world. There's no fan culture or atmosphere. So we need that to be there in order for it to be the best product available for people like Bill Foley to come and buy into this club. Those opportunities wouldn't be there if it wasn't for those types of games.
Absolutely. I mean, it's become a bit of a laughing stock now, the Old Firm derby. And we're going off on a wee bit of a tangent here. I want to pull us back to the game. And moving into the second half, I felt like we came out of the traps really, really well, Ryan. Looked like we started on the front foot like we did in the first half. Probably could have carved out a couple of chances here and there. Marcondes and Mizian maybe a little bit too hesitant on the ball in the final third. But what did you think about the start of the second half?
Yeah, I think we did come out the blocks quickly in the second half, which seems to be a little bit of a trend of late with Nick Montgomery since the St Mirren game. We've been on that kind of positive trajectory, albeit some results have went against us. But I did feel like you that Marcondes and Mizian were a little bit hesitant, maybe a touch too much. And I don't know if they're yet 100% match sharp. You know, they'd not played a lot of football before they came here. Granted, they've played quite a lot of games since being here. But I think maybe 2-3 games down the line, they might have had an extra bit of sharpness in there, take a lesser touch and get the shots away. I thought we were really dangerous when we had that spate of corner kicks. I thought there was definitely a goal coming there, a breakthrough coming. And we seem to be fairly dominant in there. We've got a lot of big players. So going forward, again, I think it's something that we should look to utilise a bit more. We don't score from as many corners as we should, given that we've got good takers and big guys in the box. So I thought if we were going to score, that's where it would have been.
Yeah, and I feel like we've not actually mentioned them so far this evening, but I think that the Block 7 boys need a big shout-out. I felt like their presence behind the goal really, really improved the atmosphere, certainly from where I sit. Of course, I sit closer to the front of the Famous Five than to where they sit in the East. So it felt like to me that it was louder. It looked really, really good behind the goals, and at times it felt like they were kind of sucking the ball in. The players appreciating it.
Absolutely, I was just going to say there's like a worldwide cliche that stands like the Co-op will suck the ball into the back of the net or the Gladys Street end at Goodison Park. So it may be a bit of a myth, but it's definitely that bit of mentality that kind of gives you the extra drive when you're shooting towards your, you know, hardcore supporters, ultras, if you will. So I think it gives us that little sporting advantage. You know, you've got to find an extra percentage any way you can. And it bodes well going into next season, obviously. Guys are going to be there permanently. So hopefully we create a bit of culture around them chucking the ball into the net when we're shooting that way, when we're needing a goal in the last minute or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I did think that they were great. Sean, were you surprised at how much noise that they made, even when we were two goals and two men down?
No, I'm not surprised. Regardless of how we were playing, whether it was under Lee Johnson or now Nick Montgomery, like they'll always be there. I think there's only maybe one or two games where I've seen that they've not been vocal in any way. So, listen, that's the kind of atmosphere that we want to see at games, and long may it continue. Listen, at times when you look back at the highlights, the TV. Obviously, the ticket sales weren't the greatest, so it didn't look the greatest at times throughout the stands. But listen, all that matters is the fans that turn up and the fans that were there and the noise that was made. So it just goes back to the point I was making earlier that now, and falling in line with the cutting of the allocation, if we're going to have the full lower of the Famous Five safe standing, we need to fill that as best we can and create as good an atmosphere as possible. And whether that be in the East or whether that be in the West or the Famous Five, it doesn't matter. We just need to be able to create as good an atmosphere at East of the Road as we can.
Moving on now, we've got a couple of major incidents, a couple of major game incidents to talk about that happened just within a couple of minutes of each other. The two red cards is what I'm talking about, if you hadn't already guessed. Now, I was trying to rack my brains and I watched the highlights back a couple of times and I couldn't find Obita's first yellow card. I'm sure it was in the first half. I'm sure it was.
And it was basically, he gets, I can't remember if he gets turned or whatever, but Triantis is there and would make the challenge and cut out the ball. But Obita makes a silly challenge. There's absolutely no need in him making the first challenge. And for someone that's 31 years old and has played as many games as he has, he should not have been stupid enough to get that first yellow card, because there was far too many, well, not far too many, but there was enough bodies back
to
be able to stop. There was four or five bodies back there, and we'd actually transitioned really well into our defensive shape. Are we just going to talk about this booking first, Dad?
I couldn't remember what he got booked for.
It is a really daft challenge. It's one you'd expect an inexperienced player to go and make. Triantis literally would have won the ball anyway, so we can't be too annoyed about that. That's a really rash decision from Obita to do that. And then he's walking the tightrope for the rest of the game after that, because he was playing on the edge. I think it was quite obvious to see. So I'm actually surprised it took him as long as it did to get sent off.
Yeah, well, just, you know, a short while before he got that second yellow, he shoves Ross McCausland in the Rangers physio off the park, and I thought, he's away. And when the referee goes over and speaks to him and doesn't give him the second yellow, I turn to my dad and say, he needs to come off, he's going to get sent off. And then he does. For me, the second yellow card is probably a bit harsh. Foul, probably. But I mean, I think he was very, very lucky to still be on the park after that physio incident. If that hadn't happened, I don't know if he would have been booked for that one. But Sean, I look at it back and it looks like Rabi Matondo is playing for it. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, it comes down to player smartness again. Everything surrounding that incident and the instance that we've already just touched on, and the one that Ryan touched on and that you touched on as well, all of these get taken into consideration, and they probably shouldn't. You probably should look at incidents in isolation, because if you make a rash challenge in the first minute or the last minute, you should treat them the same regardless of everything else that's going on in the match. But as we've already alluded to, that is just not how football is refereed. I thought it was only a matter of time till he got sent off. And if he doesn't swing his left arm, then he probably doesn't get booked.
Do you think that it's the left arm? He can physically stop that left arm, though, because Rabi Matondo's got... But he's got a hold of his right
100%.
Arm. Matondo's given as good as he gets.
No, he's one... He's obviously went like that to try and... He doesn't know where he is, because he's behind him. So he doesn't know if he's right or if he's left. He's holding on to his right. So all he can do is try and get him off of him. But unfortunately, as he's went to swing to get rid of him, as in like to find where he is and find his man and push him away, his elbow is then connected with him. And in today's game, anyone that feels any contact in the face, especially if it's from an elbow, is going to go down. So for me, I think we have absolutely no arguments with that. I think both are yellow cards, and he's, like Ryan said, lucky not to be sent off before. It's just frustrating that it's a player, well, regardless, he still should have been sent off. It's just frustrating that it comes from an experienced player. So for me, that one, second yellow. And even if he hadn't got the first yellow, I think he definitely would have got a yellow for that one. So when you're talking about consistency, you're kind of getting it a little bit there, because if he didn't get a yellow card, if he wasn't already on a yellow, he would have got a yellow for it. And you're not then arguing, oh, he's already on a yellow, we'll give him one last warning, which a lot of referees do. That's a yellow card offence, so they've given him a yellow card for it. Unfortunately, he was already booked, so therefore, yellow and sent off.
I'm not trying to disagree with everything that you're saying tonight, Sean. Honestly, I'm not. But,
we can't all be right, Liam.
Correct me if you think I'm just looking at it through green tinted glasses. I don't think that the first one, I can't remember the incident, but if you're saying that it's a stick on for a yellow card, then I believe you. But I think you should get the second yellow for the push on the physio and McCausland walking off, because one.
See, I think that would be harsher
than the coaching team, backroom staff, whatever. Usually, as soon as you place your hands on them, whether it be trying to get the ball back or disagreements, it's a bookable offence. Not that I agree with it, but I was really surprised that he didn't get booked.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be the one that tipped him over the edge. As for the Rabbi Matondo one, I don't think it's a yellow card. It's a coming together. Matondo goes into the back of him. He's holding just as much onto Obita as Obita is trying to get him off. So it's, you know, in essence, it's 50-50. Yeah, Obita's arm flies up.
I think if it's the other way about, the Rangers player gets a yellow. I think if it's the other way about, I think regardless of the
honestly,
colour of the shirt,
honestly,
the player gets a yellow.
I don't think so. I don't think it's a yellow card, but it's one of them. It's one of them where you're either on one side or you're on the other side, and it's one that VAR can't intervene on either because it's a second bookable offence, so they can't even get involved. What they did get involved with, Orion, is a couple of minutes later, Nathan Mariah Welsh. And Sean, you probably already know my stance on this. It's not a fucking red card.
I'm glad we're going to agree on
Nathan
something.
Nathan Mariah Welsh. Unless I was listening to Sports Scene on was it Saturday? I think it was Saturday, yeah. And they had Bobby Madden on. And Michael Stewart was talking to Bobby Madden, and he was kind of going through a lot of recent incidents that, you know, VAR have been deemed to have gotten wrong and what have you. And they spoke about the one at Motherwell Rangers last week, the challenge on McCausland. I don't know who it was. Was it maybe Dan Casey or something who flew into McCausland, and it wasn't even a foul. But what Bobby Madden said, and I don't agree with this, but this is what Bobby Madden said that the referees are looking at now. It's the intensity that the player goes in with. And Nathan Mariah Welsh went in with intensity. He went in with velocity. And yes, he didn't catch Lundstrom. I think Lundstrom maybe trips over the back of Nathan's head. But it's the intensity that he goes in with that I think that the referee has reacted to. And probably, by the laws of the game, not saying that I agree before anyone clips it, by the laws of the game, yes, it probably should be a red card. But if you're a supporter, a player, an ex-player, looking at a challenge like that, you're thinking, great challenge. He's went in, he's been intense, he's got passion, he's trying to win the ball back, and he's been sent off for it. I think that you're punishing a good bit of play there, Ryan.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I think if you were to remove the intensity factor from being able to tackle your opponent, what have we got left? You know, you really remove a competitive edge of the game if you take that out of it. And that's what it was. I know that the pot was probably boiling a little bit. Obita had just been sent off. The crowd are right up. We felt hard done by. And it was probably out of frustration more than anything else that he came into the tackle the way he did, because he did leave the ground. That doesn't mean to say I think it's a red card. But we're in danger of giving red cards of how they look, or I can see why he's given it. There's not an official definite stance. All I've heard all week is, I can see why he's given it, or, you know, it looks bad. But looking bad and seeing why he's given it is not actually going out there to injure your opponent with intent and intensity to do damage to them. Yeah, he leaves the ground, but as you say, he doesn't make contact with Lundstrom. He wins the ball fairly cleanly. And if anything, if he wants to give a foul, then give the foul. At most, give a yellow card. But you don't give a straight red for that. Do you know what I mean?
I think.
And it's almost as if you gave the straight red in order to pass the buck to VAR to make the decision and clean up the mess. Because that's the easy way out. Pass the buck onto somebody else. But it's never a red card. I've done that 100 times myself. It's one of those things.
Yeah.
It's not a red card.
Sean, you can see exactly what he's trying to do. He's trying to prevent that ball from being pinged up the line by Lundstrom. He's not going in necessarily to nick the ball off Lundstrom and spark another attack. He's trying to block it. And you can tell by the way that he's slid. He's not slid into Lundstrom. He's slid in front of him I can't see in a month of Sundays how that's a straight red card. But do you think that he would have given it if he hadn't just sent Obito off minutes earlier?
Ryan might want to block his ears because I can see why it was given and I can understand why the referee gave it. However, I only say those two statements when you take into consideration where the referee is standing. So the referee is at the edge of the centre circle and he's looking from behind. So I can only imagine that from behind, from the referee's view, it looks reckless, it looks out of control, and you're not able to understand because Lundstrom is going through, from the line of vision, he's going to see Mariah Welsh first and then he's going to see Lundstrom going past them. So from the referee's vision, I can understand why you got the red card out straight away. Sometimes in football, you see them get the yellow card out straight away. I spoke about it a couple of weeks ago. You get the yellow card out, you assert dominance as a referee. You're like, right, I've made my decision, leave me alone. And kind of that allows you to have control of the match. I wasn't surprised that he whapped out the red card because I instantly thought from where he is, that's how it will have looked. By the laws of the game, if you're either out of control or you leave the ground, unfortunately, in today's day and age, that is a red card. But I completely and utterly agree with both of what you have said. It is never, ever, ever a red card. His intent is to block the ball. It's not to injure an opponent. There isn't excessive force directed to the player. There is speed in the tackle, but that's, again, because he's trying to block the ball. He actually tackles or intends to tackle with his arse.
Yeah, it's like he's arse in his back, isn't it?
His legs are already past. His legs are already gone. There is not a single piece of contact on John Lundstrom's ankle or leg in any way, shape or form by Mariah Welsh's bottom half of his body. If anything, Mariah Welsh's head is the one that trips up John Lundstrom and then he goes down holding his ankles. So again, John Lundstrom has been very, very smart and he's understood the recklessness of the challenge and he's made the most of it, leading to the red card. In isolation, it's a wild, wild decision from Mariah Welsh to dive in like that. But if you take everything else into consideration and the way in which he's dived in and the reasoning why he's dived in and the angle in which he's dived in, more importantly, it should be classed as a fantastic challenge. If one of my kids at the weekend that I coached done that during a wee game, I would be celebrating at the sideline like it was a last-minute winner. Like, it's genuinely a tremendous challenge and it's one that should be celebrated. There is zero contact on John Lundstrom and he trips over Mariah Welsh's head and that's the only piece of contact that is there. But listen, you can't say anything online because, you know, that side of the old firm are very, very touchy and jump on everything.
It's never a red card and we're really, really running the risk of it becoming a non-contact sport. And if that's the rules of the game, that you can't slide in with passion and intensity, then the rules of the game are fucking wrong.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were going to file that under games gone.
Red cards for that, red cards for apparent flying elbows. File it under games gone. Is that better, Sean? You're welcome. And listen, the reaction after both our players get sent off is, I think it's admirable. We still tried to go for it. But in the end, I think the numbers kind of told, and the amount of running that the players were having to do told in the end. And obviously, Fabio Silva gets the goal that makes it 2-0, and we end up losing the game. But listen, I want to draw a line under that. I think that we can take more positives from the performance than negatives for sure. And I think the vast majority of our frustrations, although there's a couple of frustrations that we can take from the team, it's got to land with the officiating of the game. And, you know, we've spoke at length about that. But I want to move on to something a little bit more fun before we talk about Ross County tomorrow. And it's a new segment that I created in my head earlier today, and it's called Who's That Hybe? Okay, so this week's Who's That Hybe is a guess a player by the career path. So I've got four players. And what I need you guys to do is I'm going to read out their clubs in chronological order. And if you think you know the answer, shout out your name and we'll go to you. If you get it right, it's a point. If you get it wrong, you're frozen out and the other player will have a chance to hear the rest of their career and have a guess. If they get it wrong, it's no points and no one gets a point. Does everyone understand the rules of the game?
I would just like to clarify, I'm not Googling, I'm just in my notepad and I'm just writing down the years and the names.
I'm not giving you the years, I haven't teams.
I have a notepad.
So actually, Noah, I'll give you the year that this player started his career, but I'm not going to give you the years that he played for each team because we've not got all night.
Okay.
So this player started his career in 2003, and he started at Bolton Wanderers, then Hull City on loan, then Panionios, then Hibs, then Barnsley, then West Ham.
Ryan.
I think we've got to go to VAR here because I said in the rules that the players you've got to shout out your name.
Oh, I didn't hear that. You cut out.
It's all right, give Sean the point.
It is Ricardo Vazte. I will give Sean the point after a VAR review. Check complete. Goal given to Sean. 1-0 to Sean. Well done.
I'll shout my name now because you're a bit laggy, so I'm missing some stuff. But I'll shout my name.
Appreciate that, mate. Next player began his career in 2006 at Nottingham Forest, then Brighton and Hove Albion on loan, then Cheltenham Town on loan, then Hibs, then Buxton, then Shaw Lane Aquaforce, then Gainsborough Trinity. And he is currently at Basford United.
It's the post Hibs teams that are thrown me, and there was the Cheltenham.
Was it Nottingham, Cheltenham, Hibs?
So it was. I'll read it again. Brighton, it was Forest, then Brighton on loan, then Cheltenham on loan, then Hibs permanent, then Buxton permanent. Shaw Lane Aquaforce permanent, Gainsborough Trinity permanent, and then Basford United permanent, where he still is at the moment.
Jesus. I'm guessing he better be lucky if he played a game for Hibs.
He played 14 league games for Hibs.
I'll give you
the year that he played for Hibs. So he played 14 league games between 2011 and 2012. He's still playing now. He's still
35. Oh, man.
Can I ask for a position before I guess?
You can. Midfielder. Correct.
Matt Thornhill.
Well done, Johnny.
That's a second.
Well, Ryan, I would just like to clarify I did not say my name because I knew you weren't guessing.
No, I'll take that one. 2-0, Sean.
That's a hard one, though.
Ryan, you've got to come back here, lad.
No.
This one maybe a little bit easier for you. So this player started his career in 2002 with Hibernian, then signed for Rangers, then Norwich, then
Ian Murray.
Oh, we said it at the same time. I went to say his name and then
who did you guess?
My fucking name.
Ian Murray.
Absolutely Ian incorrect. Murray. Then back to Hibs and then finish his career at Dunfermline Athletic. No one gets a point because you've both got it wrong. So
why did I say Stephen Fletcher? I fucking meant Stephen Fletcher.
You said Fletcher.
So no one's getting that there.
Did you say
2002?
Ian Murray's.
It was an Norwich angle, wasn't it?
Yeah, Rangers and Norwich. I knew that would catch us out.
I didn't even I didn't even think about the year because Ian Murray was like 98, 99 or something like that.
And the final player that we've got started his career in 2003, his professional career at Manchester United. Then he went to...
Sean, I'm going to just guess it's David Gray. Right, well, I know who it is. So
I don't think you know who it is, by the way, because I didn't know that he played for United. So he started his career in 2003 at Manchester United. Then he signed for Charlton Athletic on loan. Then he signed for West Ham.
Then he signed for
Birmingham City. Then he signed for Orlando City. And he ended his career at Hibs. Correct. Jonathan Spector. I had no idea he'd played for Manchester United. Three games for United.
I was, when you said you were doing this segment, I was adamant you were going to put David Gray in or Mikey Stewart because they both started at Man United.
No.
Did
Mikey Stewart go on the caravan? No. See, I thought he did, but it doesn't matter now. It's like Spector. Played in a derby
at
one.
Yeah, that was his only appearance.
Yep.
Appearance at Tynecastle. So
this rock shot from the derby and fucked off again.
So congratulations to Sean for winning the inaugural Who's That IB for this week. Well done.
What's this prize? A signed Murray Johnson shirt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, quickly moving on before we get on to the questions and wrapping up and stuff. We're back to league action tomorrow night. By the time that this comes out, it'll be tonight. Against Ross County away from home, the rescheduled game that didn't go ahead in December. Sean, a big chance for us to get back to winning ways and go 5 unbeaten in the league.
Yeah, huge, huge. I've spoke about it the last couple of weeks, actually, that these are the type of games that we need to go and win. Listen, the players travelled up tonight, and obviously, I don't know what they would do by the time they get up there other than rest. I don't know what their match day will look like in the lead up to a late kickoff all the way up there. But listen, we've got more than enough quality to beat a Ross County side. And I think we will. And this is the second time that we're playing them in recent weeks as well. I said that we need to be winning these games to stand any chance of getting in the top six. And I think we will beat them tomorrow night or tonight by the time you're listening to this. I think it'll set us in good stead. My only concern was the fact that the level of the intensity or the performance or result against Rangers might throw us off our groove a little bit. But if anything, considering the way that we got beat at the weekend, I think that'll fire us up a little bit more.
So, Ryan, obviously this is our game in hand. A win will put us 4 points behind Kilmarnock in fifth place and 5 points behind St Mirren in fourth place, which is an absolute tongue twister. And I had to really think about what I was saying there because I could have messed that up pretty easily. But is a European push on? We need to win against Ross County, don't we?
Absolutely, absolutely. If that's what we want to achieve, it's a must win in that case. Obviously, as Sean stated, off the back of the Rangers game, the reaction from it could have been one of two ways. I think it's going to be a positive one given the manner of the defeat. We still went for it, even though we were down to 10 and then 9 men, so it showed that we really wanted to go out and win, which I think we'll take on to tonight, if you want to call it, against Ross County. Look, the last couple of midweek games we've had up there over recent years haven't ended well. I think we'll want to kind of dispel that kind of record. Obviously, there was one where Marshall got bundled in the net, and there was one that was rescheduled because of the COVID outbreak. We got 2 men sent off in that game. I think we just need to go up there and be professional, be really dominating from the first whistle. And obviously, the 3 points is a must, so it doesn't really matter how it happens. It just needs to happen, which in turn will kind of propel us on to our home game against Livingston, which is a game we should definitely be winning.
Yes, and I'm just looking back in the group chat here because I've got a question about personnel. Craig thinks that Obita won't be suspended for tomorrow's game, but Nathan Mariah Welsh will. I don't really know what the rules are.
If he's out tomorrow, he'll be a massive miss because he's been pivotal to that kind of upturn in form since the St Mirren defeat at home.
Yeah,
he's played a So he'll be a massive miss.
But what I'll ask both of you is does Nectar keep his place in that sitting role of the midfield if Nathan Mariah-Welsh is unavailable?
I hope not, because it's not the type of game where I think we would need him. I'm not going to pretend I'm clued up with the rules, but I'm fairly certain that Mariah-Welsh won't be suspended for the Ross County game, because normally when it's a straight red, you get the opportunity to appeal it within a certain period of time. Whereas obviously two bookable offences and two yellow cards leading to a red, you can't really...
You can't appeal it.
What's the word I'm looking for? Appeal that one. Yeah, you can't appeal that. So I wonder if maybe... And I'm fairly certain now all three of the competitions are aligned, or at least the Scottish Cup and the league are aligned. Hence why it rolls into all the competitions. So I think he is, but no, I don't think Triantis should play. I think it's more of a type of game where Dylan Levitt would maybe be needed more than anything else. No,
completely agree. And we'll wrap up this week's podcast with our listener questions.
Now it's time to answer the Hibs Ramble listener questions.
Right, we'll kick off with John McIntosh. He says, good try, Hibs, but what's for dinner? Who wants to kick us off?
I can't remember.
Well, I'll fill in the gaps for you tonight. But some sort of pasta or rice.
And chorizo's definitely. And chorizo. Yeah.
I don't know if it is, because I'm sure we've got a pie to have. And I know we've got
on a roast Tuesday
to have as well. It's not real, to be fair. It's not really a roast. It's more everything. But so I think it might be one of them.
Please, will you please update us when you find out?
Yes, could be a cottage pie.
That's I do like pie. A cottage pie. You know, just a it's kind of like a dolled up mince and tatties, really, isn't it?
Not a shepherd pie.
Yeah. But I was meant to be off 10 minutes ago, so it might end up turning into pasta, since pasta's a lot easier and quicker.
Right, what are you having?
Good old-fashioned steak pie, mashed potatoes, vegetables, gravy.
An absolute tiny hoolish dinner, if I've ever heard one in my life.
Tiny.
I'm having spag bol. I can hear Megan getting it prepared at the moment. So, and by spag bol, it's pasta bolognese, which I prefer, to be honest. Because, and listen, I love spaghetti. Spaghetti is my favourite kind of pasta. But pasta bolognese, it's like the wee shells, like the wee...
Aye,
wee pasta shells, and like the wee, the bits of mint and the sauce and that gets caught in the pasta. And, oh, fucking hell.
It's different, like.
And we've got a nice big garlic bread as well that we're going to pop in the oven. So, John, that's what I'm having for my dinner, and I'm fucking... Stop it. I'm not going to lie. So I'm buzzing for that. Next up, we've got Kevin Milson. He's saying, defensively, we were good. Limited Rangers to very little in the way of chances. Hate agreeing with Neil Lennon, but we were a bit toothless in attack. Don't remember us making any real opportunities. But let's be honest, the game hinged on a referee making himself the main character. Got to agree, really, with everything that Kevin's saying there. The biggest opportunity probably came in the first half. We didn't even talk about it. It was when Mizzy Ann slide tackled Jack Butland and the ball came off the post and went out. I couldn't even tell where I was sitting at the post. I just thought that he was putting pressure on and got a wee touch on it. But yeah, Sean, the referee was the main
character. Yeah, I think it was right there. We do kind of lack that killer instinct. But still, even when Venti's playing, sometimes we just lack that killer instinct. You know, just that. Bit finishing touches on good moves.
Yeah, no, I agree, and especially without Martin Boyle, you know that kind of killer instinct definitely fades away as the game wears on. But next up we got Pete, who was actually the winner of Kenai Omega's boot. So Pete, well done, mate. He says, do you think that more Hibs fans/families would attend if away fans from Glasgow were completely banned? And I think probably. To be honest, because there's got to be people out there who are like, well, I know that my dad certainly didn't take me to games where we played Celtic and Rangers when I was really wee because of you know, the way that the atmosphere was, you know, mostly from their end. But I think you would probably see an upturn in families going if they were completely banned.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I think I touched on that earlier as well. So
yeah,
no, I completely agree.
Next up, we've got Paul, and he says total corruption to the core with referees. A lot of these questions are very similar. Total corruption to the core with the referees. The more Hibs complain, the worse it gets. I would have loved Monty to tell the whole to take the whole team off before the end as a protest at the ineptitude of the officiating that the club is getting. That's maybe a bit of a stretch. I don't know if I would have liked to have seen that, but
do you think other fans from other clubs say the same things as us, though?
Oh, probably.
I mean, we're obviously fully focused on Hibs and the wrongdoings against us. I don't know about other clubs and the decisions that haven't went their way.
But yeah,
there must be a prevalent out there. It's the general level of the officiating that I don't think it's biased towards Hibs.
I don't think
Hibs.
It's corrupt. I think they're just shite.
Yeah, but they're totally shit. And there's a fear factor from the Old Firm as well because of the pressure that it can take from the media, from the fan base. So.
There is also definitely a few Old Firm supporting referees.
100%. I just don't think they're anti-Hibs, though. I just think they're pro
Basel. Pro not Hibs.
Yeah.
Pro whoever Hibs are playing.
Well, it could be St Mirren Rangers, it could be Livingston Celtic.
Yeah, I suppose.
You know?
Next up, we've got Colin McLennan. He's saying, should Scottish football be made up of two teams, the Kings 11 and the Plastic Paddies? After the officiating this season, why should other teams even bother turning up? And, I mean, it seems like every week you're hearing about bad decisions for, you know, the so-called lesser teams against the Old Firm, and it's pretty pathetic, to be honest, but we'll move on from the Kings 11 and Plastic Paddies nonsense.
I just think it could be a big contribution to people deciding whether or not they want to renew their season ticket.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a really good point. Because it feels like this season has been the worst for officiating in a long, long time. And it's maybe because VAR is there to... I didn't want to say fix their mistakes because VAR's getting it wrong as well. So I'm glad that you've jumped in and saved me there, Sean. Thanks very much. Next up, we've got Keith, and he says, compared to the last two performances against them, night and day, even with 11, 10 and 9 players, we still created opportunities. However, not pulling the trigger has cost us. In my opinion, worst Rangers performance versus Hibs since the 4-0 in 2015, even with the help. And then he ends it by saying, proper professional referees, please. And I think he's got a great point that it was night and day completely. I mean, it was 3-0 and 4-0 in the last two games against Rangers so far this season, and we looked really, really toothless. But, you know, even...
Can't wait till
get a draw with them after the split of 4-0. But no, it is failing to pull the trigger that has cost us, especially before, you know, we had the two players sent off. But like I said before, we performed admirably, IMO, after the two red cards.
I think there's a thought process behind being efficient when it comes to playing the Old Firm, because the chances are going to be few and far between, and they're not always going to be clear cut. So you have to be really efficient in attack. That's what I'm saying about the killer instinct. You know, you've got to hit the target. You've got to try and make the keeper work. You have to follow up rebounds. It's all these little things that you're not going to get much of it in a game against the Old Firm.
Absolutely, absolutely. Next up is Harry McConducky. I think I'm saying that right. If I'm not, then please correct me. He says, avoiding the obvious, I thought Triantis was good in midfield. Well, Sean clearly doesn't agree with you, so you're obviously of the right opinion, Harry, so well done, mate. Harvey Scott, did he even try to hide it anymore? Like I said before, I don't think it's a conspiracy. I think they're just really, 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 really bad at their jobs. Which is, I mean, fair enough. They probably had to go back and do some fucking marking, you know, for school tests or something. I don't know what Stephen McLean does.
But are they bad at their jobs if they apply the laws of the game?
Come away with this diplomatic shite, Sean.
No, but you just no. I'm just playing devil's advocate. You mentioned that they would get marked or they would get scored or anything like that. If the referees are as bad as the referees are, that is obviously filtered down by how they are.
The rules are wrong. But I still think that the referees are right.
But then that might not. It might just be the way that they're implementing the rules, or it might just be how they're interpreting the rules that might be the issue. So they then might not. Subconsciously, I'm not saying this happens, but if they don't make a decision for the sake of I don't think that's right, but by the laws of the game it is, they know that they're then going to get marked down when they get scored as a referee. I'm just saying, because you say that they're bad at their job, which I completely agree with. Normally, in any walk of life, if you're bad at your job, you don't get rewarded, or you don't stay in that line of work for that long. So you'd get demoted down a league, or you would get as less a high profile game or whatever like that. So potentially it might be a case of the fact that they are applying the laws directly to the laws of the game, so therefore they then can't get marked down as a refereeing performance, so they can go, right, well, the law says this, I've done this, so you can't mark me down for that. And then therefore that way that's how it's always the same referees at the top refereeing the same big games.
You fit the nail on the head there, laddie.
He sure has. Like I said,
I absolutely don't like that. But I'm just wondering if
when you put it in the context, right, people are applying, or referees are applying so strictly the laws that are written in this book, completely without any ambiguity or common sense, which is a problem.
Yeah. Listen, like I said, it's a much of a muchness where a lot of the comments this week about referees and stuff. Just before we get on to the last one, we've got, I don't know if this is his real name, Liamo Baldrini says, I'll not be back to a game against the Old Firm until we ban their supporters. Had enough of having dodgy officials time and time again, but having to listen to their shite, I'm not doing it. Not been for a couple of years now against them. They're scumbags. I wonder if his mind will be changed now that we've cut the allocation. So a lot of these came in before the announcement of the allocation cut. And just to finish on the questions, we've actually got a bit of an essay here, really, from Scott McIntosh, who runs the Amoruso Let's It Run. Who runs the Amoruso Let's It Run YouTube page.
Essays are his thing, man.
I know, he loves an essay, Big Nige. But Scott's actually a Hearts fan, and he's quite a diplomatic Hearts fan, I think, when it comes to Hibs' opinions and stuff. He's not one of these bitter ones. And he says he's got a few observations as a neutral. The decision-making in the final third was poor. Started the second half really well and were aggressive on the ball and off the ball, but the aggression led to the ill discipline when Obita was sent off, and he says not a second yellow IMO, so at least someone agrees with me. Penalty also very harsh, but Mariah Welsh can't have any complaints, so completely opposite really to what we think. I thought Mariah Welsh is never a red card in a million years. He then goes on to say, Obita has been a very consistent performer this season, but he was slack tonight, which I agree with. I think he's probably been our player of the season, but he had definitely had an off night on Sunday. Referee was very poor, not helped by the West Stand lino. Given the nature of the Boyle injury, he should have done more to try and keep players' emotions in check for the rest of the game. Get well soon, Martin Boyle. And then he said, forgot to add, Triantis looks like he could do a job in midfield. So, you know, if we're ever down a member or two on the pod, we can maybe get Scott to come on. He's clearly got quite a few good opinions about the Hibs. So, thanks for getting in touch, Scott. We really, really appreciate it. But, that wraps up our questions for tonight. And nearly wraps up the pod. Just want to touch on the ticket drive again. If you would like to donate, I'll put the GoFundMe link in the description and on YouTube and Spotify and Apple and all that. Again, just to reiterate, we've got Murray Johnson's signed shirt here and also a pair of his gloves that we will be football carding off at some point in the not-too-distant future. So keep an eye out on socials for that. We are at the Hibs Ramble on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. I forgot the socials there for a second. So if you want to get involved with us there. And all that's left for me to say is a very big thank you to those who have listened along. And a big thank you to Ryan and Sean for joining me for the last nearly hour and a half. So cheers for joining me, lads, and away and enjoy your dinner.
Pleasure.
See you later. See
you later.
Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Let's get ready to rumble.